Quasi-Cerebral Talk and Tunes. This is Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. Here's what we've got cooking up this hour. You are tuned in to Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. We are the campus community radio station broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast on unceded stolen lands of the Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, and Kwikwetlem First Nations. This episode of Typically Tuesdays was produced on unceded stolen lands of the Katsi, Kwikwetlem, and Stolo First Nations. And here at Typically Tuesdays, we recognize the host nations as being the original storytellers and knowledge keepers of these lands, and we thank them for their stewardship. My name is Leslie, and we've made it. We've made it to the first new show of 2026. Hey, how are your holidays? How was your time between 2025 and 2026? I know for me personally, it was one hell of a transition, and I think for many people it was also one hell of a transition, and it feels like this one hell of a transition is mostly hell and not transition, and it does not end. I feel like it's just appropriate to kind of acknowledge this, the first new episode of Typically Tuesdays in 2026. We witness the horrors, we persist despite them, we continue to hold space for both grief and hope, and that is really it. That is all that really we can do right now, is to continue to dream, continue to try to not let grief and rage totally consume us into being inactive, and to continue to resist in the ways that we can in order to ensure our survival and the survival of our loved ones and the survival of the people who we are in solidarity with. That is it. That's my greeting for 2026. And with that, I'm going to do a hard pivot to today's episode topic, which is about international K-pop idol fandom and fan labor and how that has really shifted in the past, I would say, 10 years or so. And I'm using TWICE as a vehicle to talk about it, because TWICE, oh my goodness, they were here last week in Vancouver. They started their... Vancouver was the first show that they did to kick off their North American leg of their This Is 4 World Tour. It's been a long time coming. TWICE is a 9-member K-pop idol girl group that I have liked for many, many, many years. Basically since they were toddlers. I mean, like, I think maybe not even a full year after they first debuted, I started to follow them, and I definitely was in the fandom when they filmed their music video in 2017 in Vancouver, and I have been waiting for them to come back since to actually perform. Hey, 8 years is better than nothing, right? So I got to go see them on Friday. It was amazing. And it got me to reflect about what has shifted in the past several years in K-pop idol fandom, particularly international K-pop idol fandom. The roles that social media and fandom labor plays in the ways that a group expands and sees success overseas. And also how that impacts how fandom interacts with content. And of course, if you don't want to hear me talk, you can also just lock in on the music, which is all TWICE. These are TWICE A-sides that I really like, and then also there's some pretty banger B-sides in there, so we're gonna listen to those today. Let's start off with their most recent single, This Is 4, and this is the extended version, which in my opinion, is better than the original, but hey, whatever. And here we go. This is Twice on Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM.
This is for all my ladies who don't get hyped enough. If you've been done wrong, then this your song, so turn it up.
I wanna go where the baddest girls are from. Might be another planet, maybe that's what Mother Nature made me. Something about that water tastes like fun. My girl's like a ring, confetti sweet on your tongue. 마주친 순간 어지러지란 이 공간 꿈속인지 헷갈려 숨이 차올라 조금 더 가까이 다가와 천천히 Can you make me feel like diamond? But what the 꽉 붙잡아도 알아봐도 We love ourself 쉽지 않단 걸 You might want some help You wanna try But not tonight So I'ma call my friend I'll take my makeup I'ma slick it tonight, okay I wanna take it to the basics Don't wanna 서두르지 마 뜨거운 사막 위에 예쁘게 피어난 장미가 day 조심스레 내게 다가올 day 나도 모르게 질러버릴 텐데 굉장히 필요한 순간이야 정신을 놓지만 지금이야 궁금하잖아 전화기 들어 질문을 던져 대답해줄까 나도 well about myself 쉽지 않단 걸 You might want some help You wanna try but not tonight So I'ma come my friend up take off my makeup I'm sleep good tonight okay I wanna take it to
Basics by Twice here on Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. Before that, you heard Fancy, also by them, because you are listening to a Twice-centric playlist on today's show. My name is Leslie, and let's talk a little bit about my observations. Let's talk about me. That's essentially what I'm saying. Let's talk about some of the ways that international K-pop idol fandom has changed in the past, definitely about like 10 or so years. Now, I've been a really big fan of K-pop idols and idols in general for a very long time, which has exceeded 10 years. And so I've seen, I think, quite a bit of the change, despite how tunnel vision the internet can get. And I want to first talk about what a fan sub group is, because you need to understand this concept. You need to understand these people in order for us to move on to our topic. Fan sub groups, they don't only exist in idol fandoms. They also exist in, like, basically any fandom that is not with your language, that with content or programming that does not happen in your language. A fan subgroup is a collective of people who are a part of a fandom who take on the role of translating typically audio-visual material of their fandom thing and bringing it to those who do not speak the language of origin and who need help understanding what the heck is going on in that audiovisual programming. There would be different roles in fan subgroups as well. So there would be a person who was particularly skilled at interpretation and translation. There might be somebody who's very good at web design, somebody who's good at coding or had the skills for video editing and that type of thing, timing. There would sometimes even be like somebody who's just like a good community organizer and could like get everybody's ducks in a row. So long as fandom has existed on the internet, fan subgroups have been able to essentially bring on their talents from various different places around the world. And they would upload this translated audiovisual program onto some kind of video streaming service in order to allow for other fans to, you know, access the thing that they want to see from the fandom, right? So, you know, a really good example would be like anime, just like straight up like anime fan subs, where people would work together to translate an anime from Japanese and give it English subtitles. You know, the degree or the quality of the translations sometimes varies. But essentially fan subgroups were absolutely essential for these programs to have viewers outside of their country of origin, especially if where these viewers were not living in countries that were particularly interested in localizing or translating a different type of, or like a foreign type of entertainment. And, you know, anime is just one example, but of course, when you're into idols who are, you know, not speaking English, idol fandoms need fan subgroups as well. You might be thinking to yourself, but they're, Leslie, aren't idols just like, aren't they just singers and dancers? Like, why would you, are you translating like music videos? Like, why would a group like Twice need a fan subgroup? Well, the reason why is because idols typically don't just perform by singing and dancing. They also perform by essentially being a personality. And so when people like idols, a lot of the times they're not just following them because they're very good performers, but they also follow them because of the persona that they have created for the public. I think for the most part, each idol industry has their own way, has their own conventions of promoting these personas. But in particular with the K-pop idol industry, when it was time to promote a new single, you could expect the group to appear on a few daytime talk shows, maybe a few nighttime talk shows, even some kind of maybe like panel discussion. Maybe one or two members would appear on there, whereas a few other members would appear on like a different program on a different television station that week. They would make appearances on radio and also on variety television shows. Importantly, a lot of the times, the companies would want to sign a deal with a television network that allowed for them to produce a reality television series that followed the idol group around for a few weeks, doing fun activities or like just observing their day-to-day life for, you know, like a short limited series. This reliance on broadcast media meant also that fan subgroups had another really important role, which was to pirate and to somehow actually bring that television program or that radio program into their own servers, translate it, and put it out there for the fandom. They would, yeah, again, like, put it onto, you know, really, really early on, I think, like, when YouTube was still quite young, groups could upload the episodes onto YouTube. Now it's obvious, and then eventually it didn't end up becoming the case, right? Like, they would have to rely on, like, Dailymotion or Vimeo or even, like, Google Drive or something like that. But now it's basically not the case at all. In fact, partly because these production companies, these K-pop production companies, have started to self-produce their own online content, they no longer have to rely so much on the free labor of fans anymore, but instead they can rely on something worse, something horrible, generative AI. You know how I feel about that. But let's listen to some music first. This next track is one of my favorite Twice B-sides. It's called Say You Love Me, and I just want to make the disclaimer that in the song they're saying the word money, which means lots in Korean. They're not saying the English word money, okay? Okay. With that in mind, please enjoy Say You Love Me by Twice.
You got something I want, money. I got something you need. You need. This is Bird Note. A rainy day can spoil the best laid plans to enjoy the outdoors. And watching bird videos online isn't nearly as fun as exploring your surroundings while birding. But the video game Alba, a wildlife adventure, lets you have adventures in a stunning virtual landscape while curled up at home with a cup of hot cocoa. The game puts you in the shoes of a birdwatcher and conservationist on a Mediterranean island. As you traverse the animated ecosystem, listen for the calls of over 50 birds, like the Eurasian sparrowhawk. Or the northern shoveler, which only appears after your character has cleaned up a local nature reserve. Some birds can only be found in certain regions of the game. House sparrows make themselves at home in the town, while great cormorants congregate on big rocks near the beach. Alba can be a great way to learn more about birds, or just a nice excuse to birdwatch without leaving the couch. The game is available on phones, consoles, or your computer. Learn more at birdnote.org. I'm Ariana Remmel.
I want you to die for me. This is Bird Note. For folks looking to try birding for the first time, getting started can be daunting. Should you learn every species call, every subtle feather pattern before you head out to look for birds? While it's good to prepare, there's a risk of scaring yourself out of starting and preventing the kind of hands-on experiential learning that's one of the best parts of birding. So when you have the time and energy, just go for it. Learning about birds is the work of a lifetime. That's why it's so rewarding. And there are great tools to help you out. Bringing a field guide with you is a time-tested approach. Even the experts turn to a field guide when they're stumped. Newer tools like the Merlin Bird ID app help identify which species you're seeing or hearing right on your phone. And if you can find another birder or a group to tag along with, all the better. You can learn from people with more experience and share the joys and struggles with fellow newbies. For many people, talking to other birders is nearly as fun as finding the birds. For Bird Note, I'm Jonice Franklin.
Special by Twice here on Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. Before that, you heard Cry For Me, also by Twice off of this Twice-centric playlist on the program. I was talking last week on Thursday to a superior at work about how I was going to see Twice on Friday evening, and she was not all that familiar with Twice at all, actually, but she was like, oh, you know what? I heard them on the radio this morning. I was like, oh, that's so great. But in my mind, I was like, yeah, but like, who was the first who brought them onto the radio here in Vancouver? Like, who was one of, if not the first, then one of the first, right? Who has been playing Twice on her radio program since 2019? Who? It was me. I have been playing Twice on typically Tuesdays for years. I've been playing Twice on community radio even before I started typically Tuesdays. Like, excuse me? Can we please just acknowledge this? Not only did I start doing it before it was cool, one, but I have a genuine love for Twice that made me put them onto radio in Canada. Hello? JYP Entertainment, please contact me for inquiries to interview Twice, because without me and other fans of Twice who have radio shows in Canada, before they became popular in North America with the mainstream audiences, before they started to tour This Is Four, there was me. Anyways, I just wanted to put that out there. And you can contact me at typicallytuesdays@gmail.com. I am waiting. Haha. Anyways, so let's actually talk about, again, how K-pop idol fandom in the international sphere has changed. And, you know, I want to say, like, I am not a scholar, I'm not an academic, I'm not a cultural critic. These are just observations that I have made from my little fangirl brain. And also, though, I did study communications, and many of my assignments were about this particular thing, about labor and fandom. And so these are just, you know, these are just observations, right? But essentially, you know, Twice's company didn't ever solely rely on broadcast media in order to get Twice's name out there, in order to, like, garner more fans. And I think one of the reasons why Twice is considered Asia's girl group is because the company focused so much of its marketing energy into social media and allowed for folks all over the world to really engage with the group and their content a lot easier. One of the things I think they really relied on was this thing called the point choreography. Now, I'm just gonna say, like, in my opinion, and this is subjective, please do not harass me. In my opinion, the first 4 to 5 years of Twice's existence, I did not necessarily feel that they had the most complicated nor interesting choreography in the world, but it was very, very easy to follow. And one of the reasons why is because they would have this thing that called point choreography. It was like a few moves during the chorus of their songs that were distinct and brought out the characteristics of the track, essentially. Those parts were because of how distinct they were also very easy to do. And so even when the TikTok dance challenges were not as ubiquitous and everywhere as they are now, but Twice's team, if I recall correctly, you know, pretty early on into their career, maybe like 2 or 3 years into their career, they started to kind of like market the concept of a point choreography. And whenever Twice would perform, or whenever Twice would promote a new single, because there were these moments in their choreography that were relatively simple and easy for people to follow, their team would invite other K-pop acts to perform those little segments with TWICE members, and they would upload those short videos online onto like their social media and their YouTube. And you know, I don't recall that there were many other groups that were doing this, because quite, if I'm going to be very honest, again, my subjective opinion is that a lot of other choreographies were not, they definitely were not as like eye-catching in or attention-grabbing in the way that TWICE's point choreography was, but also they were a little bit more complicated and harder for people to follow, and which made it so that, like, you know, if you were not, you know, a trained dancer and you were a fan, you might not be as inclined to do one of the other groups kind of like point choreography challenges, but you might be more inclined to do TWICE's because it was catchy, it was accessible, and it was, you know, attention grabbing, it was cute. So I feel like this is just one example of the way that, like, TWICE's company really, like, utilized social media to its advantage and really chose not to, you know, rely too much on the typical conventions of idol promotion and production many, many years ago. But of course, the other really big thing was that their company had the resources and also had the cleverness to produce their own reality series for TWICE, about TWICE, and would always upload them straight onto their YouTube channel. As I mentioned earlier, K-pop production companies usually wanted to, like, land some kind of variety show series or, like, reality show series for their acts whenever it was time for them to promote a new single. But they always relied on, you know, broadcast media, always relying on television, and then later on a little bit more on, like, more private streaming platforms. TWICE could do it basically in-house and just upload it right onto YouTube. For the first 4 or 5 years, I think they were still relying on the fan subgroups, though. So the fan subgroup would, you know, pull the video off of YouTube, and then each week they would, like, translate it and upload it somewhere. It became really apparent, though, that because JYP Entertainment had more direct control and ownership of their reality series, it was not always the easiest to access as an English-speaking fan or as, like, a fan of any other, who, like, spoke any other language other than Korean online, just because they would be able to essentially go for the copyright strike. And in that case, it's like, you know, it's pretty tragic, right? You are relying on your fandom, your group's fandom community to do free labor for you, but you're not allowing them to actually truly benefit in any way. You're still going after, you know, these ownership claims that, you know, if they keep piling up, eventually could bring these regular human beings into financial ruin. But they are helping you promote your group to people who, despite how well-resourced you are as a company, are not able to access the content that you are putting up online because they do not speak the language that your performance or performers are speaking. and, you know, that's always kind of been strange to me. But I think the success of these in-house production Twice reality series, which happened during every promotion cycle, mind you. I don't know if they've had a recent one, actually, for This Is Four. I have a feeling they've been too busy touring and doing other things to make a new reality program. But it used to be that every promotion cycle, they would release a series of reality shows. And they happened so often that for me as a viewer, I would sometimes wonder to myself, like, are Twice actually, like, are they actually resting? Because they gotta, like, learn these new songs and, like, practice choreographies and stuff. And they gotta, like, record stuff. And then there's, like, a bunch of other extracurricular, like, business ventures that they have. And then they're also, like, filming, like, this reality show. And like, they're doing live streams all the time. Like, are they resting? And that's a different can of worms. But what I'm trying to say, of course, is that, like, the company knew exactly what their marketing strategy was. They were going to regularly make these, I think they used to be called Time to Twice. I don't remember. But they were going to make this a regular anticipated series for viewers to promote Twice's work. Eventually, other K-pop production companies started to do that more often as well, even if they didn't have the budget to produce, like, a full, like, reality series. They started to look into having their performers film vlogs and, like, having their performers also participate in point choreography dance challenges on social media. Eventually, we also get to the point where video streaming platforms do also agree that accessibility and closed captioning benefits their business ventures greatly, and so they make this function more accessible for many of their users online. And for a very short period of time, if I recall correctly, for a very short period of time, the videos that would be uploaded by these K-pop groups and these K-pop production companies, they would allow for users to subtitle the video for them into various languages, which is great, right? Now you make this service way more accessible and easier for folks to access. The issue being, of course, is that, you know, essentially, like, translation is no longer as much of a community or collective effort, because you no longer need timers and coders involved in the translation of your group's programming. And also, and yet there is still this continued reliance on the fandom's passion and volunteerism to help the group grow and reach a wider audience. It was always a little bit weird for me to know that, like, there are obviously people who work at these K-pop production companies who, like, speak multiple languages and can write in multiple languages, and they are not being hired to, like, make this content necessarily available all the time. Like, nobody's really getting paid to do these translations. It is really the volunteerism of the fandom who does it. Since it has now become more of a common practice to look to social media and what social media can offer for a company in terms of like promotion and marketing of their idol group has become a more common practice. And since making captions and translations more available within those videos has also become a more common practice, we have unfortunately seen the rise of generative AI in basically like every single field of entertainment. Of course, sadly, including in these translations of the audiovisual content that idol companies put out. And for me, again, that is where it gets unfortunate and even more complicated, right? Because in the past, companies were relying on the free labor of fans to, you know, help them promote their work to an international audience. And now they are relying on generative AI, which is typically not always the best way to go in terms of translation beyond just like the ethics of it all. You know, AI cannot capture context. It cannot capture things like tone. It cannot capture all of the beautiful nuances of language in the way that a fan sub community might, because AI is not interested in learning all of the nuances of a language. A fan translator might be more inclined to do that. And in general, just like a lot of these translations are not good, I'm sorry about it. For example, this is not K-pop specifically, but a J-pop group that I quite like called Nogizaka 46, they have started to rely on, for a few years now, they've started to rely on AI to translate their group's regular television show that they also upload onto YouTube called Nogizaka Under Construction. And those translations are not all that great, because I remember what it is like to read the translations by the fan subgroup and the way that they would contextualize the inside jokes of the actual group. So I remember what they would say. I remember, you know, how they would say it, what the context was. And the AI translations just don't do that justice. And, you know, it's just like kind of crappy. It's just kind of sad, you know? Just wrapping up the show, there's so much more that I can say about this topic, but it's been really interesting to see the ways that fans have been able to interact with the programming that idol production companies put out, particularly on social media. And I really do think that Twice was one of the few in like 10 years ago that were utilizing social media and exploring all that it could offer in order to expand their brand and their presence. I really do think the way that Twice's team utilized social media 10 years ago helped construct the blueprint of how we currently interact with mainstream idol acts now throughout various industries, not just in K-pop, but also for some of the more mainstream J-pop groups, and also just like all over the map. And I do, of course, wish that they weren't using so much generative AI. I think the responsibility of pushing back against that really comes again from the fandoms, and I really hope that other people are doing so in the way that I am. But we're going to end off the program with one final song today. Thank you so much for listening to Typically Tuesdays today on CJSF 90.1 FM. You know I have to end it with her if we're talking about Twice. You know, it's gotta be that girl from Vancouver, right? I've been Leslie here on Typically Tuesdays. This is the final song. It's called Likey by Twice. I hope you enjoy it. I'll talk to you very soon. Twice!
one-hearted. Little tat-tat-tat.